it's life-changing. I've seen donors in tears before, happy tears, good tears. It changes your life. Seeing Africa like this and seeing this type of impact, I mean, it gives me goosebumps just sitting here talking about it, but it will change your life forever for the better. I mean, it's unbelievable.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Today, I am absolutely thrilled to have Ryan Tate on the show. Ryan, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. So, Ryan, we met a few weeks ago at one of the metal events in West Hollywood. And I was just astounded by the presentation that you gave. And so you're an ex-Marine, you're diplomatic protection officer for the
State. Yeah, I worked in diplomatic security when I got out of the Marine Corps before I started this whole conservation life.
I think it's slightly more than that, though. I mean, because so you founded a company called VetPaw, which is a brilliant name, and it stands for Veterans Empowered to Protect African Wildlife. And I remember when you gave your presentation, there was this sort of moment where, you know, you had this, I'm not sure if you would describe yourself as a decorated Marine, but it's pretty close, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think pretty much anybody that goes over gets pretty decorated. It was such an intense war, but yeah, I kind of had my moment when I got out where I was like, what do I do now? You know, I wasn't content with diplomatic security. I took it very seriously, but it just wasn't my calling in life. And yeah, then I had that moment that I think anybody, you know, any entrepreneur would have. Certainly this is a little bit different, but yeah, I had that moment that kind of sparked everything.
And so when we talk about what everything is, I mean, tell us about what VetPaw is, because
sure,
you do such a brilliant job.
So VetPaw is an organization, a nonprofit organization that utilizes post 9/11 veterans to train park rangers in Africa, protect wildlife, and advise in security manners and security operations for wildlife in Africa.
And again, forgive me, but I think you are underplaying it slightly, because what you're doing is you're mobilizing probably some of the most skilled personnel with, you know, experience, training, and you're putting them in a position where what you're trying to do is a huge task, which is to really slow down or put the brakes on poaching big game in Africa, effectively for the ivory trade. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the men and women that come over with us, they have millions of dollars in training, and what's worth more is the experience that they had in war.
Yes.
When they come back from war, they just sit idle with these millions of dollars and skills and priceless amount of experience.
Yep.
And so to put them with a park ranger, I mean, that's training that no park rangers in Africa can get.
Yeah.
And so, and it's counterinsurgency, just like, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, we don't know who the enemy is. They blend in with the local communities. They pull some of the same techniques that insurgents in Iraq and Afghanistan use.
Yeah.
And then the whole other aspect of it is terrorism.
Absolutely.
40-50% of ivory and rhino horn profits go towards supporting terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, which all pledge allegiance to ISIS.
Yeah. Let's talk about the scale of the problem, because see, what I think what you're doing is, it's effectively, I think the parallels are to the war on drugs, you know, back in the 80s, because the ivory trade, and I don't think many people realize the scale of it, but it is, I think, isn't it the fourth largest criminal activity in terms of revenue generation?
It is a top five international crime.
And so we're talking, you know, the ivory trade, which is focused on Africa, generates literally billions of dollars of what will now be black market money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all I want to do really is just get across the scale of the undertaking that you're immersing yourself in, and that this is not some sort of idle activity. This is an incredibly dangerous, meaningful pursuit that you've decided to, you know, put on your shoulders, as it were.
Well, what's unique is, I mean, number one, poachers shoot to kill whether they're aiming at an animal or a human being, which would be a park ranger or one of our team members. And they're involved with all the other international crimes. They traffic drugs, they traffic arms. It's all those top five international crimes, they're all intertwined. You know, it's crime no matter what. That's the constant. And they're all intertwined. So if you can knock one down, you know, maybe we can knock another one down. And it's what's surprising too is when you catch a poacher, you get leads into other criminal activity that they're doing in the area as well. So it does coincide with all the other, you know, crimes. And it's very dangerous, yeah.
And it's just very underplayed as well, because I just don't think people realize the scale. Now, when the US made ivory illegal, which I think was last year sometime.
Yeah, it was a federal import ban, and then they left it on the states as far as the individual states, as far as trading and whatnot. But most states are outlawing it. And I mean, a lot of the ivory in the states is with antiques and things like that. But, so it's a real battle, you know.
It is. But I think the figures that I've been reading about, effectively, that the ban on ivory in the US alone, which is not the biggest market in the world,
no,
is worth about, what, between $10 and $12 billion.
Yeah, it's huge. So China consumes 70% of the world's ivory. The US is number two, and there's no specific percentage on what the US is in the grand scheme, but I mean, 70% is there. But so if 10 to 20 billion is the US,
yeah,
just alone, and we're number two to China, who's 70%. Just imagine all that ivory that's being pushed.
And the other thing that's happening is that China, a couple of months ago, excuse me, has banned the import and the trading of ivory.
Allegedly. We'll see if it sticks.
But do you not feel like, I mean, excuse the pun, but do you not feel like you've got a bit of a tiger by the tail? Because, I mean, when you embarked on this, are you finding that every day that you're spending in country, as it were, the scale of the problem that you're trying to deal with is just almost doubling and doubling and doubling with, as you find out more about it?
It is. I think it's as we get fewer animals, I mean, a lot of poachers are banking on extinction. I mean, they're getting this ivory or this rhino horn, and as more animals go down, the more it's worth, essentially. But yeah, it is doubling because more and more people need money over there.
Yeah. And that's, so you're, do you feel like, it's a bit like any company, I guess, when you feel like you've actually got something that when you're in the space, as it were, do you feel like you've got this drive now? Like we just have to make this as big as possible. And it's almost like this task that is almost unachievable now. So what are the pressures on you to be able to keep up with all of these, you know, poachers' demands, as it were?
You know, the pressures for me is, I mean, I don't feel a ton of pressure other than, you know, that is my passion for saving wildlife. The biggest pressure for me is, you know, I'm in this now, and yeah, it's not a when, if, you know, how am I going to do it? I'm here. So yeah, I built this organization. And if we lose elephants and rhinos or any other endangered wildlife, I feel responsible. I mean, that's rests on my shoulders. So that's the only thing that I lose sleep over at night is that pressure of losing the wild.
Which again is almost like any sort of commercial pressure, as it were, but it's that combination of having something that is real and something that courses through your veins, as it were. So in terms of numbers, again, you mentioned black rhino. I just did some quick sort of, you know, Google research, but a rhino horn sells for up to $30,000 per pound.
It depends on the market and the time of year, just like, you know, anything, yes, that you're trading, but there have been horns that have gone for over $600,000 USD for the entire horn. And again, that's, you know, that's a 4-foot horn. It's huge. I mean, these horns get massive. It's amazing. But yeah, they sell for a substantial amount of money. So, I mean, if you're an African farmer that's not doing so good and you've got a family of five, you know, in the house. You know, I certainly don't blame somebody for wanting to provide, but you know, then again, you've got to educate them on, hey, this is destroying the future of your community.
Excuse me. But I think you're right. But there's two different types of poacher, really, aren't there? There's the poacher that is really just doing something because they have to, just to try and survive. And that's an education issue, I suppose. But then, as we mentioned before, you have the organized teams of people using, you know, rocket-propelled grenades and night vision goggles and large artillery. So that's what you're up against.
Yeah.
You know, and did you find out that, I mean, forgive me, but is there a feeling like, you know, oh my God, what have we done? We're biting off more than we can chew here. Or are you thinking, or is it the opposite that, you know, let's get amongst it, as it were?
You know, I've had both of those feelings where it's like, here, let's get after it. And then, we're biting off more than we can chew. But, you know, ultimately with what's going on, I mean, the more that we can take on, the more that we've got to make happen, because, you know, there is an end game here, a positive one and a negative one, that the clock's ticking. So if Rangers need help anywhere in Africa, we're going to do it. We're going to go. So it's kind of the mentality that we've taken on.
And how, let's wind the clock back a bit. So you're sitting in Washington, I guess.
New York.
Yeah. Nice warm office, or maybe it's probably a nicely air-conditioned office. Uh-huh. And there was one moment where you think, because I guess that when you're in Africa, you're not sitting in a nice air-conditioned office, and you're probably not wearing a tie, I would have thought.
No, not at all.
There's quite a difference, and this is obviously back to probably what you're feeling more at ease with. But what was the moment where you said, look, I've got this glittering career ahead of me, but something's got to change?
It was, I was watching a CNN special, not special, it was Anthony Bourdain's first show on Parts Unknown. And after, they showed a special on the Tusk Trust, and I decided to watch it. And it's what the royal family was doing in Africa. And they showed a rhino. She was darted with a tranquilizer, because if poachers can get a hold of tranquilizers, they would rather use that tranquilize the animal, because you can't hear a tranquilizer as loud as you can hear a bullet.
Of course.
They'll tranquilize the animal, put it to sleep, cut through its skin, and then the animal, once the tranquilizer wears off, wakes up and dies, bleeds out and dies a miserable death. So I watched that happen, the wake up and the video footage of this rhino. And it was almost like the rhino was embarrassed. It was terrible.
Really?
It was confused. It was hurting. And I just had that moment where I said, I have to do something. It's like if you see a crime in the streets, it's fight or flight. And I had a fight or flight watching a documentary. And I decided I wanted to fight. So I cried like a baby for 5 days, didn't go to work.
Yeah.
And then they told me, hey, you got to come to work now. So I did.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my moment where I said, I'm going to do something about this. I wasn't quite sure the scale. I knew I wanted it to be big. I wanted to have a big impact. But I didn't realize Vet Paul was going to be this. So that's kind of where it happened. I mean, that was 2012.
So that's not more than 5 years ago. So, you know, not a great deal of time.
And no, not at all.
A massive amount. But how do you then go about taking on, because you're based in South Africa, I understand. Uh-huh. So you've got to go to a South African government and say, look, you know, I want to help you. I'm another guy coming to Africa trying to make a difference, because I know that the general feeling is, okay, it's just here's another guy, you know, who just wants to make a difference. How do you go about convincing? Because I think the government support is critical. How do you deliver credibility, and how do you get across the message that you are here to stay and that they should work with you?
You need a little bit of ignorance and a little bit of confidence. And then now I think, so when I worked for the State Department, that's when I started pushing this. So I was able to get into meetings with government officials that I wouldn't have been able to get into as just a regular Joe Schmo in New York City. So that helped me out a lot. And a lot of the people that were helping me in the State Department were ambassadors to the UN. And that certainly holds its own credibility to get me the meetings. So I started meeting with the government officials, started with the Tanzanian government. I met with the Kenyan government, and they all loved it. Tanzania seemed like the best place to start. So I went on a trial thing. I just took my own money and started going to Africa on my own and running with park rangers in the bush by myself with an AK-47 and sleeping in the dirt. And, yeah, that's where it started. The credibility, like you said, it's so hard. It takes years to establish it. If you can get in, it doesn't mean it's done just because you're in the country operating. They still don't believe you. I mean, sometimes you're accused of being a spy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're accused of, you know, a lot of times you're accused of ulterior motives, whether it be trade or influence of some sort. So it's just delivering, and it's being there, putting in the hard work, the time, the labor, living with the Rangers side by side. That camaraderie that you form with the Rangers just showed, hey, this guy isn't above us. He's not below us. He's with us. So that was very important to me. It's just the hard work that you put in.
It is. And I just really want to get across that it is just incredibly difficult to do what you've done, because it would be very trite for people to assume that you can just turn up in Africa and say, look, I've got some buddies. We've been to Iraq. Can you let us loose? And, you know, I know that the way that Africa, well, certainly the countries that I've visited in Africa work, is there's a huge amount of distrust. There's a huge amount of fluidity, particularly in the political world. And it's all about relationship building. And there is a huge amount of distrust generally. So the fact that you've been able to overcome that, that's one side of the business, but then you've got the business side of the business. So how do you manage that as well?
That's a good question. Like I said, when I had that moment, I said, this is what I'm going to do. You know, there is no turning back when you leave a career at the government. You can't say, oh, hey, can I have my job back? So you have to make it work. You know, the business side is the most important side, to be honest. I mean, without the infrastructure and the development, you can't have the other guys on the ground. If I don't have that, then guess what? I'm back on the ground, one guy with one gun, running with a bunch of Rangers, which is great. And it's awesome. And it's fun. And that's, you know, the idea that I had when I got started. I want to go, you know, kick butt on the ground with these guys. But to have a big impact and a big result, and to actually impact the numbers of wildlife, you have to have a team. And so to do that, you know, the business side is so important. But yeah, it's a lot of hard work.
And again, like most successful businessmen, as it were, what's the expression? Be careful what you wish for. It's almost like now you've been doing this for nearly 5 years. It's, I guess, do you find that there's so many other areas that are interconnected? For example, if you take the fur trade, it's the reason that the fur trade has been hit so much is because it's taboo now to wear fur. And do you find that you're thinking about the marketing side of ivory? Is there a way that we can make ivory taboo? And how do you expand so you're dealing in a number of different African countries at once? So do you find yourself having the same pressures as any CEO does who's trying to expand?
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. The taboo side, yeah, I mean, I would love to make an impact in the market of ivory, because if you're really going to solve the problem here, you've got to kill the demand. But again, we're counter-poaching. You know, I didn't learn, you know, marketing skills in the Marine Corps in Iraq or Afghanistan. But that said, yeah, I mean, what I had mentioned before was any Rangers that need help, I want to help them. So that's a ton of parks that have asked. And, you know, with a new country comes new policy, new firearms policies, new training policies. There's U.S. government regulations for training other people in other countries that you have to abide by.
Yes.
And then you have to have that infrastructure. So each country has a new infrastructure, which creates VETPOL's infrastructure as a whole. So then we have to develop new infrastructures in these countries and new bases. So yeah, it's definitely the same stresses. I mean, if not more too, because I don't sell a product. I sell an experience. I don't sell anything, but I market an experience. I'm giving you something to feel good about. And I have to portray that. I can't show you, you know, this coffee cup here, this is why you should buy this.
I think the other thing is that it is just so underplayed. As I said at the beginning, I think people just are not aware, A, of the size of the illegal ivory industry. B, they're probably not aware of the size of the problem in terms of the decimation of these, the numbers of, you know, rhinos, elephants. You know, there's been catastrophic losses in the last 3 years. And I don't think you're marketing just a feel-good factor. I think it's much deeper than that. I think what you're doing is you're almost like you're taking on the entire, you know, illegal trade single-handed, as it were. And if people realized the impact on terrorist activities in terms of the funding, the billions of dollars, the amount of rangers that are killed, you know, hundreds of rangers are killed each year because poachers shoot first and ask questions later. So I think what you've got is the beginning of something that could just be an enormous movement, which touches all sorts of other, you know, people's lives. So it's not just a, you know, saving the odd elephant, as it were.
Sure, sure. I think that the most unique thing to consider when supporting this cause is that, I mean, terrorists thrives in poor communities. And in Africa, well, we've always said it's the next battleground. But that said, in Africa, there's a lot of communities that are supported on ecotourism, which is relatively untapped. And what's going to end up happening is when you remove that ecotourism from an area, from a community, because you lose the rhinos, the elephants. I mean, who's going to go to Africa to see impala? No, you go to see the big five.
Yeah.
When you remove that big five out of the ecosystem and the whole thing deteriorates, then so does that local economy. And guess what's going to thrive there when there's no money? Terrorism. So beyond just the ivory and the rhino horn supporting terrorism there, once that rhino horn and ivory is out of the system there, terrorists are still going to, they're going to begin to thrive even more there.
Yes.
So it's a win-win here if we cut off the poaching epidemic.
Yeah. So from a support perspective, I just want to try and make a very clear distinction between what you're doing and what some of these other charities are doing. Because what they're doing, and they do a fantastic job, but it's very passive. What they'll do, they'll collect money, they'll send money to an activity. But what you're doing is very active. You're controlling and what's happening. And I think that what you're doing is we really need to find a way of how we can get the message out that what you're doing is real boots on the ground stuff, but also the impact that you're making on veterans' lives as well, because these people that have served the country, and you're effectively allowing them to put their experience to goodwill. So from a psychological perspective for them, that must be a huge benefit.
It's huge. Some of our guys were evac'd off of the battlefield. So they didn't leave battle on their own terms. Yeah. So now to go and fight for something that you know, doesn't have weapons to fight for itself, elephants and rhinos, and then to leave the battlefield on their own terms, that does a lot for a human being. I was never evac'd off of a battlefield, but I, you know, have colleagues now and friends that I watched evac'd out, and that's heartbreaking for them.
Yes.
So now to use their skills for good, nothing political involved, just wildlife. That's pretty powerful stuff.
It is. And how do you find yourself asking yourself the question, how am I going to grow this? As you mentioned earlier, you alluded to this expression that, you know, you're working above your pay grade, which I think is crazy, but or you said that you weren't educated and you weren't taught how to deal with marketing. But I get the impression that you know exactly how these things, what needs to be done. What are you doing, or how are you getting the support that you need from other people in the business community?
I think networking is the number one thing. Getting out and talking to people. It could be anything from a metal event that I met you at, or to a local community, small town community event, to, you know, getting out to a fair or something, just talking to people, because you never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah.
And networking. I've always said, if I don't care if you're good at coloring books or making cars or selling stocks, you tell me what you're good at and tell me the passion, you know, the cause that you want to support, and I'll find a way to make that work. It's being innovative.
It is. But I think that there is definitely that marketing angle, which, you know, how do you make someone who has ivory, you know, hate themselves, basically? That's what we need. Because, I mean, do you feel that with China clamping down on ivory and making it illegal, do you think that in the same way that prohibition had an effect on alcohol in the 30s and, you know, the war on drugs pushed drugs underground, do you think that suddenly there's going to be a lot more demand, which is going to make your job so much harder?
I think it's going to drive the value up of the product. If you want ivory, it's a luxury status. If you want ivory, you're going to get it. Rhino horn is a false belief that it's going to cure something medical. And so if you're in a medical situation, you're going to try to find a way to get it.
Yes.
Just like it's illegal to move it out of these countries, making it illegal to bring it in isn't going to stop it. I mean, it's still moving out of these countries illegally, so it's going to move into them.
But there are other countries that are not quite as strict, as it were, with the with their regulations. So those are the gateways. And I think there are so many parallels with the war on drugs. And if people can see what you're doing as being the early days of the war against the Colombian cartel, for example, then, you know, that helps them put into perspective the size. So how many guys do you have within the organization now?
Sure. So we have 6 guys on the ground right now, and we're growing to 12 by the fall. That's one thing we've been very careful about is, like you said earlier, taking on more than we can chew. Well, you know, to put a guy on the ground, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we try to keep it as minimal as possible because I'm not coming over there to show you how to do it or do it for you, but I'm coming over there to teach you and work with you. So we want to stay as lean as possible and not grow too fast.
Is there an inflection point? So is there a point where you say, if we had a certain amount of capital, then we could go from 6 to 12 to 24 to 48. We could operate in 5 countries. Are you building the sort of management infrastructure, the chain of command, as it were, to enable you to grow if the funding comes in to help you do that?
Sure. So we're going to eventually start having these different teams all over the place instead of moving parts of teams over temporarily and then back, you know, a few weeks here, a few weeks there, then back to home base. We're going to have select home bases in each spot, which ultimately we have to double our yearly budget to do that. But it has to happen because that's the greatest impact, is if we can have certain bases within 1,000 kilometers of each other, we can certainly take over an entire larger region. So that's what we're focused on now. But we have to double in order to support those.
So what you've probably been shot at God knows how many times, you know, you're there, you're in country. What keeps you up now? What keeps you awake at night?
Fundraising, absolutely. And then the thought of losing wildlife. I mean, it ultimately stems back to that, but fundraising, I know we're going to do it. But you know, it's never easy.
No,
you know? You've got to keep these guys moving. And in order to do that, it costs money. You've got to keep training these rangers and sending guys back to retrain and refresh. Otherwise, all the hard work that we've done previously goes down the drain. I would say it's fundraising.
And how's your company set up? Are you a not-for-profit or are you a...
We're a U.S. and South African-based nonprofit organization. We are working on a U.K. Status as well. But yeah, we're a nonprofit organization.
So if I'm a company owner, what does that mean in terms of my ability to, does that mean that I can get a tax break on donations to VetPoor?
Donations or services, you can get a tax break depending on what the service is, but yeah.
Okay. So what services, so there's fundraising, but are there other services that, that you are looking to build that momentum? Because, you know, as you said, the clock is ticking. You know,
sure.
The poachers are not waiting for you to respond. They're out there. The numbers of elephants and the numbers of big game is falling. The value of ivory is going up. So you're in this perfect storm. So what is, aside from funding, which we just spoke about, what next? What can people listening to this do to help you help what is a diminishing resource?
I mean, infrastructure, things like development. We can always use advice on development. You know, we've gotten a lot previously and we're doing well with it. But we always like to take new ideas and try to, you know,
you're talking about business development, structure.
Business development, structure, infrastructure. But gear as well, new technologies over there, whether it be satellite surveillance or drone support or some type of new off-road vehicle. We can always use things like that. Computer monitoring systems, all of this. I mean, like I said, if you find a technology that's not in Africa, we can probably find a way to use it. But technology and programs.
And would you say that your company, the way that you're dealing with this is very different to some of the other charities? Are you much more direct? In other words, as a company owner, if I want to donate time, resources, money to you, can you give me back some sort of direct, almost like a direct feed? I mean,
so what's unique about us, I mean, we have no plans to just stay in one spot and run one counter poaching academy for rangers. We want to grow because it's the only way that we're going to do this. But beyond that, yeah, we allow anybody that supports our organization to come over and stay with us and see the results that their product or their donation or service is having in the area. And there's not very many organizations that do that. Not organizations that are boots on the ground, direct action like we are.
And that's going to be pretty scary. So what you're saying is I could, you know, be a significant donor to your company and you would actually show me what you do. I would be, what's the expression, where you become part of the team, as it were. So is the opportunity there to shadow what you're doing? Because that must be pretty scary, I would have thought.
We do. I mean, you'll probably be one of the safest people in Africa because you're surrounded by Marines and Green Berets and whatnot. But yeah, no, the opportunity is there. If you want to come out and see what we do, you can absolutely come out, stay with us, eat with us, spend time with the team, and we'll take you to see African wildlife like nobody else has ever seen before. So it's pretty unique.
And that must be for, you know, someone who feels that they're business is doing great, but they're missing that spark of excitement. It must be the greatest adventure you can imagine.
It's life-changing. I've seen donors in tears before. Happy tears, good tears. It changes your life. Seeing Africa like this and seeing this type of impact, I mean, it gives me goosebumps just sitting here talking about it. But it will change your life forever for the better. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And I think that's exactly how it should be. The fact that you've put your life on the line, your career on the line, to do something which you really believe in. Because it would have been so easy for you to back off and say, I'll just let the other guys do it. You know, the amount of effort and I mean, how many times did you feel that you had actually, the wall was unassailable or the job actually was impossible to do?
It was never an option. It might have looked impossible, but it had to be done. It was one of those things where I sat there and said to myself, if I don't do this, am I going to look back on this in a year and be like, man, you know, am I going to feel guilty? And it was. I knew that if I didn't do something or at least give it a try, I was going to feel that guilty, guilty feeling. That's the only way to really put it.
Or the feeling of missed opportunity, I guess, as well.
Yeah, definitely a missed opportunity to do something that I believe in or that is fulfilling. And I think that's what everybody deserves in life, is to do something that's fulfilling.
Yeah, and I think that there are so many people. I know that there are many people that I speak to that would give their right arm to be with you, to support you. And the fact that you're willing to, because it's a huge amount of pressure on you to have someone visit the organization, because not only have you got yourselves to look after, suddenly you've got this city dweller turning up in Africa with a pair of shiny brogues.
Sure.
You know, so
you're going to learn real quick though. You learn real quick. You know, a lot of the people that come over are very informed before they get there. We make sure they're prepared. We don't put them in any serious harm's way or any harm's way, really. We take them out to see the sites that poaching have happened, and then to show them where the populations are now thriving. We take them out on some, maybe some snare patrols during the day, walking patrols, but you are literally protected by essentially a special forces team the entire time that you're there. So it's, you feel safe. I feel safer in Africa. I think this is just crazy, but I'll say it. I think I feel safer in Africa than I do, you know, walking around certain cities in the States.
Probably because you're just walking around with a fully automatic weapon in front of you.
That may have something to do with it. Yeah. Yeah.
but I think that's something that everyone should consider, really. I mean, just the, people should learn about what you're doing. They should take a few minutes out of their lives just to do some research, because when it gets to the stage, which it is now, that there are more statues of lions in the world than there are lions, when there are just literally a few thousand big game elephants, rhinos left, you know, there's no turning back. So, I think what you're doing is phenomenal. And I think that everyone listening to this should find a way to help you. And I think the way that you're actually allowing people to follow, to shadow you, what you're doing must be the most exciting thing that many people have ever done or will ever do in their lives. So they should, your phone should be ringing off the hook.
Well, I appreciate it. That's a great way to put it. The more, there's more statues than there are lions, and elephants are going to eventually become a woolly mammoth. And if we don't do something about it, you got to read about in children's books, but they'll never get to see it.
Yeah. And this is an opportunity to actually make a difference that's tangible, that's measurable, that's actionable. And I think the fact that you've created this, which I know is going to become a huge, valuable organization. I take my hat off to you, and I think what you're doing is amazing. And I think it's fantastic that you've taken the time out to talk to us on the show here.
Well, thank you so much. These opportunities are what helps us. So the pleasure's all mine.
Wonderful. Great. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show. How do people get hold of you? How do they contact you? How do they find out more about all of the things that we're talking about, and how do they do it now?
Sure. So we're on social media, VetPaw, VETPAW, Veterans Empowered to Protect African Wildlife. You can also find us at vetpaw.org, and then you can shoot us an email at info@vetpaw.org if you have any direct questions, and we've got somebody monitoring that. So we'll make sure to get back to you in a timely manner.
And they can get through to you, because these are the sort of guys, I think, that will want to take action. You know, they can speak to you. You can you'll speak to them freely. You'll talk about all the things that we talked about.
Absolutely. I'm very much accessible, so it's no problem at all.
Well, that's great, right? Thanks once again. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Matthew.